Farrell, are you speaking?
Good morning, Your Honors.
Oh, thank
May
you.
May it please the court.
Yes, please.
I lost the video for a moment, Your Honor. I apologize.
Okay.
Your Honor, this is Alberto Zovero on behalf of the petitioner, Tomas Sanchez Popoca. Mr. Popoca is asking the court to reverse the BIA's finding of adverse credibility and that he was found to not have presented evidence of having been convicted of a particular serious crime, and therefore he was denied asylum and the Convention Against Torture and withholding or removal. And I think, Your Honor, on the brief that we submitted, we state the reasons as to why, for example, the particular serious crime was not applied as to Mr. Thomas, or is not even analogous when you look at the, for example, he was convicted of a DUI sometime in the 1990s. The only record that we have is that he received a 2-year sentence, and based on my client's testimony, that 2-year sentence was converted to probation and he was admitted to a rehab facility, and that was reduced for 7 months. There's testimony from Mr. Popoca that he completed the program, that his attorney told him to change his life around. He was at the time when we applied the Francesco factors, Your Honor, that the nature of the offense, the circumstances, and whether or not he's a danger to the community. In this case, it seems if somebody is convicted of a DUI and sentenced to probation and do a rehab program, there was no injuries to anyone, unlike the Holder case where the defendant actually crashed his car into a home and injured a woman substantially. The court then found that, yes, that DUI under that circumstance should be a particular serious crime. Here, what we have, the only thing that we have before us is that, and based on his testimony, is that he went to rehab. And
well, as I understand it, the IJ, the government argues otherwise, did accept that he was detained for 7 months. I think he was sentenced to 364 days in jail or something. I don't know if the IJ credited the part that he was in rehab, but what is your understanding?
No, Your Honor. They made an adverse credibility finding because of the little details that he had, and those can be explained because he suffered a head injury and he had some PTSD traumatic conditions that he suffered as a result of having his father murdered, his brother murdered, him being kidnapped and used as a mule. And at that time, given that he was a youthful offender, given that there was no injury to anyone, I think if the court considered those things, it would find that it wouldn't constitute a particular serious crime.
Counsel, when was the head injury suffered?
I believe the head injury, I stand corrected, Your Honor. I believe the head injury was suffered after the DUIs. But when I mentioned the head injury, it's because it affected his ability to recall the events at the 2018 hearing of removal. That's why he had very little details. And when the government says he couldn't get the documents, as many of us know, it is documents of a misdemeanor from almost 30 years ago are almost always destroyed. My client in good faith went and tried to obtain those documents, and part of the record says that he was unsuccessful. In some, he got a record that he was convicted of a DUI in 1972 when he was 4 years old. And for much of the process he was pro se. Thus, it's when the documents are not readily available, Your Honor, they're almost 30 years old. It is hard to come back with some paperwork saying that, yes, he did have a misdemeanor conviction, which is what he testified under oath. there were, it was more than one, but it, but what the Frantescu factor says is not a cumulative number of offenses, but rather a particular serious crime.
No, I thought it was a felony because of the priors. No,
and that's possible, Your Honor.
I thought that was the I thought that's what the record that exists does show.
And when he testified, he said that the judge reduced it and allowed him to go to a program instead of actually seeing jail time.
Right, because he suspended the sentence and sent him to jail, but he was convicted of a felony, as I understand it, because of the prior.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. Now, nevertheless, he did not present the documents, and therefore the court found that it was his burden to show that he wasn't convicted of a particular serious crime. But as the court mentioned a moment ago, well, what is a particular serious crime? And if we look at the nature of the offense, and if we, or what isn't there? Because had somebody been injured, had property been damaged, had anything of that nature happened, we would most likely have a record of that, and he would actually served sometime given the number of offenses that he had before. He wouldn't have been able to get probation as he did had this been a serious case where injuries took place.
Counsel, under the statutory scheme, we don't have the authority to determine what is a particularly serious crime. That's left to the agency to determine. So we can't disagree with the finding of the agency regarding whether or not this was a particularly serious crime.
And thank you for asking that question, Your Honor. I think that the BIA and the immigration and the IJ erred in not making, in not finding that this case is not similar as to the ones where DUIs are considered particular serious crimes, where people are actually injured and property is damaged. Nothing like this sort of happened here.
Either the IJ or the BIA cite IAEA as saying that a DUI is a particularly serious crime, but it actually didn't say that because in that case, as you say, there were injuries. Is there any case court case holding that a DUI without injuries can be a particularly serious crime?
I'm not aware of that case, Your Honor.
And presumably there has to be some legal content to what is a particularly serious crime. And yes, the agency has discretion, but it does have discretion without regard to just say anything can be, could jaywalking be a particularly serious crime?
Well, and under the analysis of Frantescu, they look at that three factor.
Well, correct, but as I said before, there has to be some content to what is a particularly serious crime. If they say, if the agency was to decide that jaywalking was a particularly serious crime, would we have to say, fine, it's your discretion?
And that would be an abuse of discretion, Your Honor. I think that's not the case
we have here. We do have cases that say DUI, maybe not the exact same facts in this case, but they say DUI is a particularly serious crime, even when there is no injury. If the actions persist, eventually there probably will be an injury, and that's why DUI is such a serious crime, because of the potentiality to injure someone if the activity persists. So if we have a case that says DUI is a particularly serious crime, how can we say that the agency committed legal error in finding this particular DUI a particularly serious
crime? Because when the agency made its decision, or the IJ made its decision, and the BIA actually held the decision, they based it on factors that my client failed to produce documents showing that this was not a particular serious crime. It was rather his failure to say, here's a transcript or a police report or a conviction. And as I mentioned earlier, when things happened 30 years ago, those documents are not readily available. And he had a hard time trying to find anything that had to do with those offenses.
If you want to save any time, you're almost out of time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Mr. Couch.
Good morning. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Greg Kelch and I represent the Attorney General.
Can I ask you to start out? Yes, is there any case in which we have said that a DUI without an injury is a particularly serious crime?
No, ma'am. And I do not believe that that is the point of the BIA's decision here. The point of the BIA's decision is that there's a lot about this case that we don't know. Was there a crash? Was there any personal injury or property damage? How fast was he going? How many prior DUIs did he have? As the applicant, it was Mr. Papaka's burden of proof to resolve these issues.
Because,
and he simply did not address
that. How does that happen? I understand that we have case law that says that if the agency essentially makes a prima facie case that it's a particular serious crime, something like that, then the defendant has to prove that it wasn't a particularly serious crime. Is proving that this is a DUI a prima facie case? And two, I'm back to the question of what does it mean to prove that it wasn't a particular serious crime? He had to prove that it wasn't an injury? Is that what he had to prove?
Well, what I often see in other cases where this comes up is somebody who has, say, a DUI conviction or something similar, that they're asked questions about it in immigration court, such as that was a DUI. Was there a crash? Was there any injuries? Do you recall how much you had been drinking that evening? And in most cases, if the applicant's testimony is credible, it's just no big deal, and the parties move on. The problem here is that Mr. Papaka, throughout these proceedings, has asked the agency to just assume that it was no big deal, but he hasn't addressed any of that. He's never discussed the basis of his DUI. And in fact, when he was asked,
are there any other cases that you've dealt with where the DUI was 30 years old?
Your Honor, I can't remember how old the DUIs were, but I have
pretty
dealt
old,
with
right?
people with older DUIs.
And number two, was he asked those questions?
He was not, Your Honor, and he was represented by counsel in immigration court. He was not did not discuss it during his direct examination. On a cross-examination, the questions that he was asked, his answers were somewhat evasive. And then on redirect, he also did not go back and discuss this issue. He also did not provide any personal declaration in advance of the hearing going through his criminal history. And again, he was represented by counsel. So it puts the immigration judge and the BIA in a very awkward position here because he's not engaging with the issue and not providing evidence on it. And now he is saying that, well, since there was no evidence about the nature of his DUI, the circumstances of the DUI conviction, therefore it must not have been particularly serious. It's entirely circular logic. And as to your question about whether DUI is inherently a particularly serious crime, I think if we look closely at the BIA's decision, they're dealing with that issue in a very tactful way. They seem to be recognizing that not every DUI is going to be particularly serious.
Any DUI with priors is particularly serious.
Our reading of the BIA's decision is that because he has a conviction for DUI with priors and a two-year sentence, he did not meet his burden of proof to demonstrate that it was not particularly serious. There's an absence of documentation of clear and credible testimony about this, and that's a very reasonable. It's not an abuse of discretion for the agency to resolve the case that way.
Wasn't he actually sentenced to probation and he served 7 months? Your brief seems to say he didn't serve. For 2 years, but he didn't. IJ was quite clear that he didn't.
Well, the FBI rap sheet is at this issue is at 297 of the administrative record. It says he has 730 days in jail, 24 months prison suspended sentence, and 36 months probation, all to be done consecutively.
That's what it says. But the IJ specifically found incarcerated for 7 months. He didn't specifically find that it was rehab, but he did specifically find that it was 7 months.
Yes, he did accept that part of his testimony, apparently giving him the benefit of the doubt when he said he served 7 months in county jail. And I want to remind the court about how this
served
played
7 months.
Out.
Excuse me, he didn't say that. He said he served 7 months in rehab, not in county jail.
Your Honor, this is at pages 188 to pages 191 of the record, and he was asked about his sentence. He said the trial judge gave him a choice. He could go to prison or go to rehab, and he chose to go to rehab.
Right.
Later, he is asked again to clarify, and then he changed his testimony and said, actually, he served 7 months in county jail. So whether there was rehab while he was in county jail, that's probably a logical conclusion. But his initial point was that he didn't serve. He didn't go to prison. The judge gave him a choice. He could avoid prison by county by going to rehab.
Well, he did. In California, as I understand it, prison is prison and jail is jail, right? So when he says he didn't
and
go
the
to
judge
prison,
record.
He didn't go to prison. He went to...
He didn't go to prison, but he was sentenced to it. And that's what the parties were asking. That's what the DHS counsel was asking him about, his sentence. Was he, in fact, sentenced to 2 years? And he never really gave a straight answer to that question, nor did he ever discuss the circumstances that leading to the DUI. And so under those circumstances, we maintain that it was not an abuse of discretion for the agency to hold that he had not satisfied his burden of proof to demonstrate eligibility for withholding and CAT by showing that he had not been convicted of a particularly serious crime. And with the time I have remaining, I just want to briefly address the issue about CAT deferral. As we argue, oh, I'm sorry, may I make one point on that? This did come up in my opponent's argument and in the reply brief. He refers to page 194 of the administrative record, where Mr. Popica is saying that he couldn't get documentary evidence about his criminal past. I want to be clear, the question at page 194 was about his asylum application that he completed pro se. He was asked to list all of his arrests, and that's where he talked about that he couldn't get the documentation, and that may have been the case, him being pro se and not speaking English. But he was represented by counsel in immigration court. The immigration judge specifically told counsel and Mr. Popica that he needed to get information about his criminal past. And so with that is what we say in our brief, that he hasn't demonstrated that he made any effort to prepare for the hearing and to provide that information.
Well, I'd like to hear your CAT argument, so go ahead.
Yeah, as we noted in our opening brief, he simply did not argue that he had waived the issue of CAT deferral on the merits. And that is what the BIA noted in its decision. It said that he had waived that issue. CAT deferral, the merits of CAT deferral is entirely different from whether his DUI was a particularly serious crime. If he wanted his credibility and his eligibility for CAT deferral on the merits to be reviewed, he had to put the BIA on notice of that. And so therefore, that issue is not properly before the court. If there are no further questions, I'll conclude. And we would respectfully ask that the court deny this petition for review.
Sharpen. My understanding is that your legal position is that you agree that the agency has to make some showing on the particular serious crime issue before the burden shifts. Is that right?
And Your Honor, pardon me, I'm not getting you here.
I know we're trying to fix this. I don't know why.
Okay.
But
I believe my Wi-Fi is strong.
No, it's not you. There's something wrong with my mic. My understanding is that the agency's position is that the agency has to make some kind of a showing with regard to particular serious crime before there's an obligation on the petitioner. Is that right?
Yes, we think the BIA act. Yes, our point in raising that is to note that we didn't just pull this out of thin air. I mean, there's the FBI rap sheet says he has a felony DUI conviction with priors with a 2-year sentence.
Oh, yeah, but there has to be some quantum as well. I mean, again, to use a silly hypothetical, suppose he had a jaywalking conviction. I assume that wouldn't lead to the conclusion that he has to prove that he wasn't convicted of a particularly serious crime. Is that right?
Well, jaywalking, I suppose, you know, jaywalking, if you pulled out a gun and shot at somebody while you jaywalk, that would indeed be a particularly serious crime. So if it's a jaywalking conviction with a, you know, he paid a $25 ticket, no, I don't think that the agency is going to ask him to discuss that at hearing and tell us what were the facts and the circumstances. But when you have a felony DUI with a two-year sentence, that could infect the like Anaya Ortiz. Maybe he did crash into somebody and hurt somebody. We don't know. Since that issue has been raised.
In other words, if the agency makes a showing that is not itself on its face a particularly serious crime, but it could be depending on the circumstances, that's enough.
Yes, Your Honor. And that is consistent with his burden of proof.
Strange. All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Cerbero, do you have something else?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
One minute. Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. As to the deferral or cat removal, I think it is worth noting that counsel in the merits hearing spent the last minutes arguing about the torture, about the likelihood of torture if he returned to his country. So the BIA was on notice. And also when the appeal was timely filed, citing error with the immigration court, that also puts the BIA on notice.
But it was a very specific question that was raised. It does seem to me that they were certainly led to believe that the BIA did believe that the only issue that was being raised was this issue about the wife testifying.
Thank you, Your Honor, for pointing that out. I think it is clear that once all issues are being raised in the appellate and the appeal paperwork, the BIA is on notice. Now, moving on.
But my understanding is that it's not sufficient to file a notice of appeal with the BIA that says the IJ was wrong in all respects, right? That's not, and never file a brief.
And that's not what we did.
What you said was the IJ was wrong as to A and B, you know, categorically, and as to whether it was a particularly serious crime, and as to the cat. But then as to the cat, you raised a specific question. And since no brief was filed, one certainly would come to the conclusion, ordinarily, that that's what was meant, just that one thing. No?
That is a reasonable conclusion, Your Honor. But also, just going back briefly, 20 seconds regarding the particular serious crime, I think my client's totality of circumstances wasn't quite analyzed, and he was not believed. The finding of adverse credibility should be
it's overruled. Not really adverse credibility. It is true that he didn't say anything about the circumstances of the crime, did he?
He did say that he talked about his sentence. He gave you as much as he could remember.
The lawyer might have asked him, was anybody hurt, and he didn't. Were you his lawyer? I don't know if you remember whether you were his lawyer, but whoever was his lawyer could have asked him that. Would have been helpful.
But it's reasonable to conclude, Your Honor, that there was no injuries and there was no damage to anyone based just on the sentence alone. It is not a leap. It's not a great leap to make. If somebody's sentenced to probation, it would indicate that, yeah, this is what we have in front of us. And again, Your Honor, I respectfully ask that you
okay.
find that he is not.
Thank you very much. The case of Sanchez-Popoca versus Garland is submitted. We will take a short break. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.